Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Our next guest, Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian, will mix it up with you on Twitter anytime you like. He's active on there. He is far more engaged than I am on social media. I think he kind of likes it. He's joining us now. How are you, man? How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you on this beautiful, sunny day in January?
Yeah, I'm a little confused with the weather because just like 2 days ago, it was a monsoon. And now it looks beautiful. What's going on?
No, it's like I wish I would have made it tea time. What the hell?
Aaron, before we get into this, the big question for you, I know you're a big football card collector. If I could own only one rookie card of a NFL player, what is it that I need to have in my collection?
Of all time?
All-time card, like I could conjure up a 1958 Topps Jim Brown rookie card, or a Walter Payton rookie, or a Joe Montana rookie. What is it that? Go ahead.
Well, for me, it's Payton. But I say for you, it's got to be Joe Montana. You need yourself at least a PSA 9 Joe Montana rookie. No, a 10. If you bought a 10, you know, Anna might not. She might put her foot down on 10. That might be. You might have to sneak by that, like embezzle some money somewhere and hide it somewhere or something. But if not, I'm sure you can pull that off. She'd be okay with it.
Aaron Fentress joining us, the secret to your card collection. Last night, Blazers win. Damian Lillard, C.J. McCollum, a great game. And as NBA players are prone to do, Damian Lillard took offense to something you were tweeting. And correct me if I'm wrong, you seem confused when he said, hey, you know, that's not what you tweeted about. There was a pause there, and I'm with you, man, because there's a lot of things I say and tweet, and I go, what are you talking about? What happened there?
You don't have the audio?
I played it, but I'm going to play it again. All right, I'm going to play it again. This is the best we got.
You played it already, fine.
We played it already, so people heard it.
Okay, that's fine.
But, yeah.
Okay, so like a lot of people are making a bunch of assumptions about what happened or didn't happen. It's kind of comical, actually. But people have to understand what we're doing at that time of night, you know, when you're working. So I have a post up that I'm updating. I'm transcribing stops who went first. I'm looking at play-by-play. I'm looking at the box score. I'm making tweaks. I'm fixing things. I'm doing all this stuff. And then Damian walks in. And I kind of needed time before I asked my question of Damian, but no one raised their hand in the Zoom meeting. Like, there wasn't one blue check mark up for a raised hand. So I'm like, is no one really going to ask a question of the guy who just had 40 and 13? You know, just like, what are people doing? So then I put my phone down, and I quickly clicked the button before someone said, well, no questions for Dame. And so I have the first question. So I asked him the question, and it was about the resolve they showed coming back from 20, not once, but twice. They were down 20, then they came back, then they went down 19, and they came back, which is unusual. Not many teams pull that off in a single game. He answers the question fantastically, like he always does. I mean, I've covered Major League Baseball, NFL. Everyone knows I've covered Oregon forever. Damian Lillard is top five all-time interviews. Like, he's choice. Like, he's definitely in the top five all-time.
What makes him good for listeners? For listeners, what makes him good? Is it that he'll speak to anything, or is it the answers he gives, or what?
He'll speak to anything. He goes above and beyond. Like, I've never heard him give a generic answer. Like, when you transcribe him, you're going to transcribe. Like, and it's not, and no offense to Russell Wilson, who I actually find entertaining, but Russell Wilson is very, very, he's fluff. Like, I made a mistake one day. I asked Russell Wilson about a young receiver on the roster. And as soon as I asked, I was like, oh, my God, because he named every receiver on the roster. Like it was a little league award party.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, no, I asked you about David Moore. He ran down. He named 9 receivers and told me how good they all, because he didn't want to leave anyone out. So he's a little fluff. Lillard is substance. There's meat there. And he's going to give you even more than you thought you were going to get. And it's always great. Like this, I've never had experience. And actually, what's funny is if you go back to the year they beat Houston, I covered that series when I was working at NBC Sports Northwest. I was just helping out. Ducks were my main thing. I covered them through the playoffs. And I'll never forget, it was I think it was a San Antonio game they lost, go down 3-0 or something like that. And I'm sitting at the press conference. This is only the second year in the league, I think, right? And I was just listening to him break down and talk about everything, and I was absolutely mesmerized by the guy. Like, this guy's like a kid, like 26 or whatever, 25, and he was just amazing. I thought, this guy is well and above his years, and he's only gotten better. So he gave me a fantastic answer, right? And so he gets done, and I say, thank you. And then I go to get back to work, and then all of a sudden he hits me with this. Also, I heard you talking on Twitter about me and CJ not being the best backcourt.
That surprised
you. I was like, what? Like, first I was like, are you talking to me? Then I'm like, he's giving me a look. And I'm trying to think, is he just being playful or is he calling me out? And then I literally did not process what he was talking about. Like, I didn't, there's a pause, like 3 seconds where I'm trying to get my mind back on this question after my mind was deviated to doing other things, and it came out of left field in a Zoom session, right? Yeah. So I finally go, today? Because I literally was like trying to think, because you know how I am, dude. I debate all the time, right? So if you bring up a debate that I had or I said something on Twitter and it's not in my immediacy, I have to search for it in my Rolodex. So then finally it hit me. Right before he said he brought up Wizards, it hit me, and I start to say, oh, I, and then he said something, and then I said what I said, where I said that, where I said, after he said something about it couldn't have been today because of a game I had or whatever, and then I said, yeah, someone, or I raised it as an option because someone said it was no contest or something like that, that you guys were the best, and I said, oh, what about Westbrook and Beal?
Right.
And then there's that moment where, okay, now where's this going? Like, I'm admitting to what you said I said. I remember what you were talking about. It was 5 days ago. So it was a while ago. And also for me, it was a throwaway debate. Like, you've known me for 20 years, dude. You know, you know how I am, right? You can say right now, you love peanut M&Ms. And I'd be like, man, the milk chocolate plain ones are best. An hour later, someone else could say, I hate peanut M&Ms. The plain chocolate ones are better. I'd be like, why are you dissing on the peanut M&Ms? They're bomb.
That's right.
That's just how, that's
you're
just, how I am.
You're argumentative.
I'm on the fence.
You're argumentative.
And I'm on the fence.
Yeah.
Right, I'm on the fence. And so this debate, I never once tweeted that Beal and Westbrook are better. I just raised the question. And then people were throwing things at me. You know, are we talking about the last 8 days? Are we talking about this year? Are we talking about all time? You know, I'm throwing out arguments. I'm like, well, you know, Westbrook's averaging a triple-double. Beal's leading the league in scoring. It's not like it's a dumb debate. You can believe it's Dame and CJ if you want, and that's fine. I don't have a problem with it. I really don't have a horse in the race. Now, you know me when I have a horse in the race. LeBron, Jordan, I'm digging in my heels, and it's on. And I will go 2-3 hours that Jordan's greater than LeBron, right? But this, it was like, I think I went like 6 tweets and then told the guy, and I was out. That's how little I cared about it. Had a Wizards fan said, I think Beal and Westbrook are way better than Dame and CJ, I'd have been like, what are you talking about? And I would have been arguing the Dame and CJ side. Right? So to me, it was just a fun little debate with a couple fans. So the idea that he saw it, one, and that he took offense by it, too, and then he brought it up, just threw me for a loop. So then I'm just like, okay, now he's giving me this weird stare. And it mirrored the stare he gave to the camera when he dropped the tray on Westbrook and Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
So in my mind, as I'm trying to figure out what happened, I'm thinking, oh, he's giving me the same stare he gave the camera after he dropped Westbrook because I brought up Westbrook maybe being in a better duel than him. That's what he's doing. Like, it's a psychological game, right? So it was weird. And then, you know, fans are just bizarre. Like, he owns you. he dominated you. He puts you in your place. I'm like, put me in my place? He's not my daddy. I have a son older than him. I've raised a young man his age. Like, he's not putting me in my place. He's a player. I cover the team. I am going to give my objective opinion. It's not, you know, some fan tweeted at me, why are you being adversarial to the team? I'm like, how am I being adversarial saying that Dame and CJ might not be number one? They may only be number two. It's not like I said Elfrid Payton and RJ Barrett just as good, right? Or I said Mia Kazan to take those guys 2-on-2, right? I'm talking about the leading scorer in the league and two-time All-Star, a guy who's averaging a triple-double, has an MVP, and is a 9-time All-Star, right? They're both going to be Hall of Famers. I'm not talking about scrubs. So it's just, and that's what we do in sports. We debate these things. Who's better, Wilson or Mahomes? Who's better, Jordan or LeBron? Who's better, Montana or Brady? Who's better, you know, Nurk or pick a center?
Yeah, you know, let me ask you something. Let me ask you something, Aaron, because I was talking about it before you came on, and not even talking about Lillard here, but the NBA players, that culture in the NBA, the players in the NBA, much more visible, much more active on social media than maybe some other leagues. What is it about the NBA that sort of breeds that back and forth with players, or maybe even the insecurity that players have in the league? Is there something going on there?
You know, I never covered the NBA full time till now. I've covered college football and Seahawks NFL mainly, and some Mariners. So it's my first time around in the NBA. So I'm sort of learning, you know, as I go. And I have talked to some people who cover the league, and they're like, "Yeah, the NBA players sometimes take things personally when you don't mean it personally." And so that's where you have to, like. And I haven't had a chance to even, like, I've talked to Dame before. I met, you know, back when I was at NBC Sports Northwest and covered some games. I had interactions with Damian. But I haven't since I took over the beat for us in the summer, right? So I haven't had a chance to build more of a rapport with him, you know, while I was there every day at practice or in the locker room or even traveling for games or whatever. So he knows who I am from just being around over the years, but he doesn't know me. So plus, I think the separation for all of us, like, there's been no, you know, the Zooms are as cool as it gets in terms of our situation, but there's not that interpersonal things you develop with players when you get to know them and you talk to them and they see you. You know, like for example, one day I'm at the Seahawks game in Atlanta last season, and Bobby Wagner started making fun of my shoes. You know, why does Bobby Wagner make fun of my shoes? Well, he knows me because he sees me every week, and he knows I work with Michael Sean Dugard, who he was tight with, and so they're cracking on my shoes, saying I need to get some Air Jordans. Ha ha. You build those kind of things like that. You know, I haven't had a chance to do that. So if he sees me tweeting that I think these two guys are better than him, he's not going to know exactly how to take it. The other thing is, it was Westbrook. I think that struck a nerve. Like, it could have been Bradley Beal and Mary Poppins, and I don't think he would have reacted the same way to Westbrook, because there has been a rivalry there, and he's passed Westbrook by. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. You know, 3 years ago, I think he passed him up as a player. So, you know, again, I'm learning learning on the rope, on the fly here, learning the ropes. But I don't, you know, I'm sure at some point I'll get a chance to talk to him, and I don't think it's a big deal. I don't believe he hates me.
I actually don't think he's mad. I think he was just used. He usually does stuff like that coming off wins versus losses. Because when it's a loss, he's very inwardly focused, I've noticed. He's always asking what I could do better, and I like that about him. He gets very inward. When he wins, it's mugging for the camera, waving goodbye to somebody. It's kind of, you know, he's very outward focused, and I think it was something that probably crossed his mind when he saw you on the Zoom call. And he went, there's that guy who was saying I wasn't as good as the Washington Wizards, you know. But
one quick thing, a buddy of mine, Aaron Dixon texted me, and he said, Blazers fans should be mad at you. He went 40-13. You should piss him off every day.
Hey, this team, you know, you got a win streak going. Is it fool's gold? Do you like what they're doing? I'm not tweeting it. I'm not putting it on social media, but can we believe in the Blazers right now? Or is this just, they've played Minnesota, they've played Sacramento?
All right, here's caveat centrist. So, after they were 3-3 and people were freaking out, I did an article where I pointed out that, yes, they're 500, but of every team that was above 500, Portland had played by far the toughest schedule in terms of win-loss. I think their combined record was 24-14, where there were other teams who were like 6-2 or whatever, who had played combined winning percentages of under 500, 434 or something like that. And then I was looking at even the offensive ratings, because the Blazers' defensive rating was 28. People were freaking out. I'm like, good Lord, guys, they played three teams in the top six offensive rating. They played three former MVPs. No one had done that yet. And LeBron, Curry, who's won two, LeBron's won four, and Harden. They played Curry's a scoring champion and Harden's a scoring champion. They played nine All-Stars, counting Mitchell, Gobert, George, et cetera, Kawhi, Draymond. So they played by far the toughest group of offensive players and offensive teams of anyone in the league. So, yeah, their rating stunk. You look at Philadelphia at the time, they had the best rating in the league. They played a bunch of guys in a bunch of teams in the 20s. So my theory was, don't freak out now, because the schedule's about to get easier. Now, the Chicago loss was a shocker, because that was one you expect them to win. And as a Bulls fan, I was shocked as hell. But please, because that's the first time I think I've seen them win in Portland in a long time. But then you just look. They had Minnesota. They had Sacramento twice. Toronto was struggling. You just knew they were going to win a bunch of games and improve their stats overall. But then here's the caveat, though. Does this mean they're better or that the schedule got softer? Now, they start a seven-game homestand tonight with Indiana, which has been a good team, 7-4. But they just traded Oladipo. I don't even know if they're going to have LeVert today or not. So and Warren's out. So this could be another game where they're favored. Then they play six more at home against the Knicks. I think they have Memphis twice. Atlanta's up and down. They're going to be favored in every game. So my thing coming in was they should be 9-3 in this 12-game stretch where they had 10 of them at home. And if they do that, they're going to be sitting pretty because then it gets tough. Then they go on a big road trip where they go to Philly, Milwaukee, and a couple other tough teams. So I still think the jury's out on where this team is because we've seen them struggle against really good teams and do well against mediocre teams. So we don't know exactly what they are, but a win's a win, right? You got to pack it. You got to stack up these wins when you're the favorite at home.
Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. You can find him on Twitter. I'm sure he'll be there right after he gets off this call. Fentress, I appreciate you, man.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
There he is. Fentress at the Oregonian. Look, bottom line, have the Blazers improved? Or is this win streak due to soft schedule? 503-417-7575. College football to talk about as well in today's show. Urban Meyer, who said he was done. He said he was done. Apparently not done. Jacksonville Jaguars and Urban Meyer talking about a return to football coaching. That deal. Is that deal done? Is that all hammered out now, Peter Sampson?
I'm not seeing it officially done yet, but the expectation is there.
It will get done. In college football, you've got the University of Texas under Steve Sarkisian. They have added a special teams coach that they're going to pay $1 million to. It's the first $1 million special teams coach in America. Speaking of that, Austin in Austin, Texas is called in, listening to the show from Texas. Austin, what's up, man?
Hey, John. Man, it's been a long time since I've been on the show. I used to call in with the impersonations a lot back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
I was just wondering about what your take is on Coach Sark. You know, we're all excited down here, especially after he did that great performance on a national stage. Of course, you know, it's Alabama, but I think we have the talent that can get us at least, you know, where we can consistently win 11 games and at least maybe make the college football playoffs. But I was just wondering what you thought of Sark.
Well, here's the thing. I love second acts. I love good comeback stories, and Sark's a good comeback story. He's proven both at his time at USC and later at Alabama that he can call offensive plays. I have to say that the best predictor of future performance is usually past performance. But in the case of Sark, I think it's a little different because I think his time at Alabama and what he learned from Nick Saban about major, major college football may benefit him in a way that might not benefit, you know, your typical coach, given that he's worked for Pete Carroll at USC. He's had his own program, you know, obviously at Washington, we watched with mixed results and it ended badly for Sark. And I think there were a lot of people that were concerned about him as a person versus him as a coach. But let's assume that he's got the person part of this under control If he does, I think that Sark at Texas makes a lot of sense. I mean, he's parlayed what was a dead end to his career to a resurgence at one of the best colleges in America. And when I say best, I mean the University of Texas generates more revenue than any program, any college, any athletic department in the country. So he's going to have money. He's going to have resources. He's going to have the Texas recruiting footprint. And he's got fresh in the mind of those recruits that he's probably out talking with right now. He's got fresh in the mind, look, I can get you a Heisman Trophy because I just got Devontae Smith one. So if you are somebody out there that loves Texas football like Austin does, I think this is a good hire. It's a smart hire. It makes a lot of sense. And I trust Sark more than maybe the average coach who's trying to resurrect. I'm looking at coaches historically like a Bobby Petrino who have had to go down and take a mid-major job. Or, you know, there have been coaches like Lane Kiffin. He had, you know, how far down did he have to go just to get back to Ole Miss? Sark had the benefit of going to Alabama. He got the blessing of the Pope in Nick Saban. I think it makes sense. If I were a Texas fan, I'd be pretty excited about it because the goal is the playoff. And the goal is disrupting.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.